Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry. The Justice Department released a report today, the result of its 14-month investigation into the Baltimore Police Department. It found that it routinely discriminates against blacks, repeatedly uses excessive force, and that the police are not adequately held accountable for misconduct. Vinita Gupta leads the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division.
Today, the Department of Justice announces the outcome of our investigation and issues a 163-page report detailing our findings. We conclude that there is reasonable cause to believe that BPD engages in a pattern or practice of conduct that violates the Constitution and federal anti-discrimination law. BPD engages in a pattern or practice of making unconstitutional stops, searches, and arrests, using enforcement strategies that produce severe and unjustified disparities in the rates of stops, searches, and arrests of African Americans, using excessive force, and retaliating against people engaging in constitutionally protected expression. These violations have deeply eroded the mutual trust between BPD and the community it serves, trust that is essential to effective policing as well as to officer and public safety. The problems in Baltimore didn't happen overnight or appear in a day. The pattern or practice that we found results from long-standing systemic deficiencies in the BPD.
Today, Baltimore's police commissioner said biased law enforcement tactics won't be tolerated, that the department has already fired some officers who committed some of the most egregious violations found during the Justice Department investigation. But the Baltimore police used force 2,818 times in 6 years. They found only one violation. The Baltimore Sun, writing about the blue wall of silence, says, imagine being a cop who calls for backup in the city of Baltimore and backup doesn't come. The Justice Department report says several officers told Justice Department investigators they believe their fellow officers retaliated against them for reporting misconduct or for objecting to improper enforcement activities. Other officers expressed fears that they would face such retaliation and that the Baltimore Police Department supervisors would not address any retaliation that occurs. The Justice Department says that its review of the Baltimore Police Department's internal affairs files underscores these concerns. The report talks about a detective. He considered reporting two fellow officers for brutally beating a suspect back in 2011. When he asked a sergeant what he should do, the detective got the following warning: if you're a rat, your career here is done. The detective decided to do the right thing. His report about the incident ultimately led to the prosecution and conviction of the officers, but his life was hell and he no longer serves the citizens of Baltimore. The Department of Justice report says fellow officers frequently called him a rat. A sergeant left pictures of cheese on the detective's desk. The detective also told DOJ that a lieutenant denied his transfer request to a violent repeat offender squad because the detective snitched. Worst of all, says the Baltimore Sun, the detective could not get help from other officers when he needed assistance with suspects once after a foot chase. Think of that for a moment. The report says on two occasions, no one in the detective's unit responded to his calls for backup. Eileen Alfandari has more about the report.
It also found that officers make large numbers of stops, mostly in poor black neighborhoods with dubious justification, and unlawfully arrest citizens for speech officers think is disrespectful. Physical force is used unnecessarily, including against people with mental disabilities, and black pedestrians and drivers are disproportionately searched during stops. The federal investigation was launched after last year's death of Freddie Gray. The 25-year-old African-American died of a severed spine after he was handcuffed and shackled, but left unrestrained in the back of a police van. No police officers were convicted in his death. For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandari.
Baltimore Mayor Rawlings Blake.
Today marks an important step on our path to reform. With the release of its finding report, the Justice Department is sharing with the community, with the city government, and with our police department the conclusions of its 14-month-long investigation, an inquiry that I asked for last May. The findings are challenging to hear. But let me be clear. I never sugarcoat our problems, nor will I run away from our most pressing challenges. The report identifies specific problems in the department, but the transparency of the report offers a crucial foundation if we are going to move forward, because I believe transparency is the only true foundation upon which we can rebuild community trust.
Dr. Jill Stein with the Green Party on Twitter writes, "The Baltimore Police Department report provides evidence for why communities need to have more control over their police forces, not the other way around." And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. 28-year-old Chelsea Manning is facing new charges in connection with her suicide attempt in early July. Manning supporters are demanding that the Secretary of the Army, Eric Fanning, drop the charges against her and provide her with adequate treatment for both her gender dysphoria and her suicide attempt. They delivered a petition today to the Army Secretary. It contains more than 115,000 petition signatures. If convicted on new charges, Chelsea Manning could be placed in indefinite solitary confinement. Her lawyer is the ACLU's Chase Strangio.
All three of the charges stem from the evening of her attempted suicide, and they all relate to the suicide attempt itself. She still hasn't received a clarification and detailed description of exactly how they're making their case for these administrative charges, but it's very clear that it's all related to the property that she lawfully had, but used in a manner that the facility is alleging was prohibited in her suicide attempt. The fact that her suicide attempt itself somehow threatened the integrity of the institution, not that she threatened anyone, and that, you know, somehow she resisted a transfer even though she was unconscious at the time that anyone came to her.
The ACLU filed a transgender prisoners' rights lawsuit, but Manning has still not been able to get the help she needs.
Even though we were able to get her hormone therapy initiated following a lawsuit, that she went years without that treatment. And the experts that have evaluated her have made clear to the military, at least since we filed our lawsuit in the fall of 2014, that the hormone therapy alone was not going to adequately treat her condition, and that refusing to allow her to be treated as the woman that she is would have the effect of continuing to undermine her mental health, which has been something that she has repeatedly told them, that experts have explained in court documents, and now that has been very clearly manifest in what's happened to her. And I think it's sort of a paradox of the federal government's treatment of transgender individuals in general to sort of have the attorney general come out in the context of anti-trans legislation and say, we recognize that transgender women are women and we will treat them as such unless and until, this is the caveat that Attorney General Lynch did not say, that person is arrested and incarcerated within the custody of the federal government, because the federal government, through the Bureau of Prisons, as well as through the military disciplinary system, continues to treat women who are transgender as men, as they are with Chelsea, and that is basically taking away a core part of her humanity. And I think we can all imagine what it would be like day in and day out to have this fundamental aspect of who we are continually denied, to the point of having her hair cut regularly to remind her that she is seen and treated as a man, even though she's a woman.
Chelsea Manning, who was known as Bradley Manning in 2013, an Iraq intelligence analyst, was convicted in military court of 6 Espionage Act violations and 14 other offenses. She was sentenced to 35 years in prison for giving the material to WikiLeaks. One video called Collateral Murder showed a U.S. Army Apache helicopter in Iraq firing on a group of people they said were holding weapons.
Light them all up.
Come on, fire.
Keep shoot.
Bushmaster 2-6. We need to move time now.
All right, we just engaged all 8 individuals. Roger.
I got him.
2-6 is a 2-6. We'll move, but we got 30.
Oh, fuck, sorry. Well, I was just
bypass.
God damn it, Kyle.
Sorry. I hit him. I had...
The dead included children and a Reuters journalist. Other documents Manning released were incident reports from Afghanistan and Iraq. They were released by WikiLeaks under the banner of war logs and showed more civilian casualties than the U.S. previously reported. The U.S. government said they put the lives of people in danger who supported the American military. Pentagon Paper whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg, who supports Manning, says she is one of my heroes in many ways.
Totally misleading. The fact is that I see no, there are of course differences in each of these situations, but no essential difference between what she did and I did, and the charges that she initially faced were pretty much the same that I did, although she was in a military court. I too was called a traitor by various officials, just as she was, and was facing, as she did, life imprisonment in one of her charges. I was facing 115 years in prison. And as I say, with more than 40 years having elapsed now, no harm was ever demonstrated from anything, either to individuals or to the American security. On the contrary, for what I revealed. And the same has been true now for 6 years for Chelsea. Even in court, they were not able to come up with a single instance of where actual harm had committed. And yet, she was facing this very long sentence of 35 years. And when I said earlier, if I may just say, when I said what it revealed to me was that she was human rather than superhuman, she was acting, I think, in a very understandable way with a woman in an all-male prison facing 35 years or 30 more years or so, having already suffered, you know, 10 and a half months or so in solitary confinement, which is now, the light of publicity is now turned on this very common practice and revealed it to be very cruel and unusual punishment and designed to make people go mad, really, in various ways. And to torture, in fact. And the idea that she would now be subjected, having responded in what I say is a very human, depressed way to these, how could one's prospects be more depressing than that? Well, conceivably, but it would be hard to imagine. And that she'd reacted in this way, that having done, and then facing a prospect of further isolation and solitary as a result, would seem either totally unthinking, which is quite possible, or on somebody's part, a deliberate attempt to destabilize her and to cause further depression. So it presents our bureaucratic and our prison system in its very worst light.
And Daniel Ellsberg says, looking at how the government is treating Manning, there's no wonder that whistleblower Ed Snowden is taking refuge in Russia.
Had she eluded arrest, had she gone to another country, as Ed Snowden did, and he did this, by the way, very much with Chelsea Manning's precise example in mind, having seen that how he would be treated if he stayed in this country to face the charges, as Hillary Clinton and John Kerry have both suggested he should have done. He saw her in 10 and a half months in solitary confinement. In his case, I believe he would have had to look forward to a life of solitary confinement. And because he is understood to have many secrets in his head, which they would not want him to reveal to the American public or to anyone else. He is clearly entitled to political asylum by all precedents before, and the nature of his case, and the only reason he hasn't been granted it anywhere but Russia is that every other country, well, mostly, and there are many others he'd prefer to be in, are just afraid to antagonize the president and his successor by granting him the asylum, the political asylum that he clearly deserves. Well, the same would apply to Chelsea Manning.
Ellsberg says the government was particularly aggressive regarding Chelsea Manning because what she revealed was clear-cut war crimes.
Namely, over to Iraqis, prisoners that we'd captured, knowing that they would be tortured, which is as illegal under international law and U.S. domestic law as doing the torture ourselves. So that when President Obama, very specifically, and the information went into his administration as well as before it, when he said, we don't torture anybody, I have stopped that. In fact, he was as liable to criminal prosecution in the International Criminal Court, if we accepted that jurisdiction, as his predecessors, Rumsfeld, Cheney, George W. Bush, because of this turning over, knowing that they would be tortured and taking no effort to prevent that or expose it. Beyond that, Chelsea revealed in the information she put out that when people in the process said we shouldn't be doing this, or won't these people be tortured? Isn't this a problem we should either investigate or expose? And there were many creditable queries that were revealed in the cables that she revealed. In every case, the response by superior authority was, don't ask those questions, don't pursue this further, don't investigate. Now, that happens to be as clear-cut a violation of these statutes as the torture itself, because the statutes calls very clearly for any reasonable allegation of torture to be investigated and dealt with. A third point that she brought out a good deal was widespread assassination teams in Iraq and, I believe, in Afghanistan, which, again, are clear violations of international law. So that the fact is, we have one more instance here now where only the messenger has been prosecuted and, in this case, convicted and tortured, actually, in terms of the long period of isolation that she suffered and the current abusive charges. And they do these, in contrast to what I revealed, did reveal crimes that are actually indictable and prosecutable in the international court. Now, the likelihood of that happening is close to zero. We're talking about the President of the United States.
Daniel Ellsberg speaking today on Chelsea Manning. You can find out more about the petition to drop the administrative charges against her by going to www.freechelsea.com. And this is WBAI in New York. In environmental news, Ecuadorian plaintiffs can't collect a $9 billion judgment in the U.S. against energy company Chevron for rainforest damage. This is according to a ruling by the Federal Appeals Court on Monday. It upheld a judge's finding that the judgment was obtained through bribery, coercion, and fraud. Rebecca Miles has more.
The ruling comes amid a 23-year legal battle against Texaco, later a subsidiary of Chevron, over claims that the oil company polluted vast swathes of Lago Agrio in the Ecuadorian jungle. Plaintiffs argued the company discharged 18 billion tons of polluted wastewater into open pits, contaminating water used by the locals while operating a concession there from the 1970s to the 1990s. During litigation in 1995, Texaco agreed to clean a number of the waste pits in proportion to its interest in the consortium at a cost of $40 million, and the Ecuadorian government released Texaco from further liability. In subsequent litigation, however, indigenous Ecuadorians argued the cleanup was incomplete. They argued the company had hidden toxic waste pits with a thin layer of topsoil. Activists said they couldn't see the contamination at first. Everything seemed normal. There was vegetation, insects, but there were no animals. Chevron has long argued that the 1998 agreement between Texaco and the Ecuadorian government absolved it of liability. After years of fighting, Chevron shifted the case to Ecuador, only to lose to a multi-million dollar judgment after a new left-wing government supported the plaintiffs of some 30,000 villagers. They won a judgment of $17.3 billion, which was cut in half in 2011. Chevron appealed the judgment, arguing it was illegitimate, and Chevron argued the judgment was obtained through bribery, coercion, and fraud. Much of Chevron's defense rested on an Ecuadorian judge who claimed the plaintiffs offered him $300,000 bribe to ghostwrite the ruling in their favor. But documents acquired by Amazon Watch showed that the judge was lying when he admitted to the bribe. About Monday's ruling, Chevron's president said he was pleased that the truth has prevailed over fraud and corruption. A US spokeswoman for the Ecuadorians, Karen Hinton, told AP they were shocked and called it a sad day for the US justice system. As disappointed as we are, this ruling will not deter the Ecuadorians, their lawyers and their supporters from aggressively seeking justice in Canada and other countries where litigation is underway to seize Chevron's assets, Hinton said. Rebecca Miles, WBAI News, New York.
In other news, there is a new investigation by the Associated Press. It finds that South Korean authorities have repeatedly allowed Samsung to use concerns about trade secrets to block the release of information about chip workers' exposure to chemicals and other hazards. Luke Sheridan reports.
Wang Yumi was a high school senior in 2003 when she went to work at a Samsung factory, bathing silicon wafers and chemicals for computer chips and LCD screens. The company's semiconductor manufacturing process often involves the use of toxic and sometimes carcinogenic chemicals. 4 years later, Yumi was dead from leukemia. Her father soon learned another worker died from leukemia. He sued the South Korean government for compensation and demanded it investigate health risks at Samsung's factories.
We want Samsung to apologize for using harmful and toxic chemicals which caused cancer to a number of its workers. We are demanding Samsung make proper compensation.
Part of his battle has been getting Samsung, South Korea's largest company, to say which chemicals were in use during his daughter's employment. Workers need that information so they can apply for workers' compensation from the state if necessary. But an Associated Press investigation has found that at least six times South Korean authorities have, at Samsung's request, withheld that information because Samsung says it fears trade secrets will be exposed. The company refused an on-camera interview with the AP, but says it is transparent about all chemicals it is required to disclose. Serious illnesses among former Samsung semiconductor and LCD workers. 76 have died. Kim Mi-seon began working at Samsung in 1997. She's now blind and suffers from multiple sclerosis, which she blames on exposure to lead solder, acetone, and isopropyl alcohol. The exact causes are not known, even among the medical community.
It would have been fine if I had not entered Samsung at all.
Only 10 workers have won compensation from the government since 2008, and about two dozen cases remain unresolved. Luke Sheridan, The Associated Press.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. There was another gaffe yesterday afternoon by Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump.
Hillary wants to essentially abolish, the Second Amendment. By the way, and if she gets to pick... If she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know. But
House Speaker Paul Ryan urged Trump to clarify his statement.
It sounds like just a joke gone bad. I hope he clears it up very quickly. You should never joke about something like that.
Then Trump tried to walk back his comment with Trump apologist Rudy Giuliani at his side.
Well, I think you're talking about, I'm not sure because I haven't heard this question, but I think you're talking about the power of people that are in favor of the Second Amendment, and they have tremendous political power. And I think they really are strong, they're united. And in fact, the National Rifle Association just came out and they agree that that is absolutely the way they feel, too. We have tremendous power, the people like myself that believe in the Second Amendment. If Hillary Clinton gets elected, I think she's going to decimate the Second Amendment, if not abolish it, and she'll do that through judges.
Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren tweeted, Donald Trump makes death threats because he's a pathetic coward who can't handle the fact that he's losing to a girl. Heizer Khan, whose son, Army Captain Humayun Khan, died in Iraq in 2004, reacted to Trump suggesting gun owners take matters into their own hands. On MSNBC, he said there's no room for violence. There should be a call for unity, a call for patience, a call for understanding. He implores people who continue to think they will vote for Trump to change their minds.
That look at the candidate. Candidate has time after time proven to be undeserving of their vote. So please reconsider. reconsider, look at the record, look at the danger that we are headed. So I would implore them, I would ask them that in the name of patriotism and the love for this country that we all have, reconsider your position, like most of your leaders have already reconsidered their positions.
Meanwhile, some Republicans say they back Clinton because they don't support Trump's bombastic style and controversial statements. Others object to his lack of foreign policy experience. The Clinton backers largely include former officials, though some current Republican office holders have said they won't vote for Trump. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York. Now, stay tuned for the After the News segment, but what we need you to do is to email me, linda@wbai.org, with your phone number. Maybe you want to comment on Daniel Ellsberg and what he said, or on Chelsea Manning, or perhaps on the changes that are in store for the Baltimore Police Department, or any of the other stories. If you want to talk about Trump and the way he's been conducting himself, anything you would like to talk about, Keyser Khan, an interesting person who has taken a stand against Trump, then email me, linda@wbai.org, and we will phone you. Email me with your phone number, or you can tweet me at Linda Perry Barr, and I will read your comments on the air. Okay, so stay tuned for that coming up shortly.